You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The godfathers of the Colombian Cali drug cartel wanted to get rid of Pablo Escobar in 1989, and they offered Jorge Salcedo the job of hunting the reviled drug kingpin down. Jorge was reluctant because he was a cartel outsider and a newlywed, but he agreed to take the assignment because, as he saw it, he would be serving the interests of his beloved Colombia. It also satisfied a certain hunger for adventure, and he had the option of backing out at any time, or so he thought. That's the story that William C. Rempel tells in his latest book, At the Devil's Table, The Untold Story of the Insider Who Brought Down the Cali Cartel. It's published by Random House. I'm very pleased that brings Mr. Rempel to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Isn't Jorge Salcedo in hiding?
Yes, he is.
How did you connect with him?
Well, I met him the first time in a courthouse in Miami where I heard he was appearing, and for a reporter to hear that he had a chance to see or meet a man in witness protection was an offer I couldn't refuse.
I've done an interview with somebody in witness protection who was totally frightened all the time, and he came with two bodyguards who had guns. And at one point, it was a taping, and I stood up and said, I got to get some hot water. And he took it as a signal for somebody to come in and kill him, threw himself on the ground. Are they all that scared?
No, Jorge is not in that condition, although he has also a whole family, extended family, to protect. But he doesn't live in constant fear, but he lives with a cautious regard for his safety.
Did you meet or did you correspond?
99% of our conversations have been on the phone. We, besides the meeting in the courthouse where I got my first impression of him, which was very favorable because the government got up and just praised him to the high heavens as a man of courage and help from the United States. So that's my first impressions from the government, not from him. But after that, it was all on the phone, except once we agreed to do a book, he had to be more available to me, and we did meet for 3 days.
Were there any rules, anything you weren't supposed to ask?
No, nothing.
What about trusting him? Can you believe everything he told you?
Well,
he was involved in criminal activities.
Yes, he was, by our standards, certainly. On the other hand, he was always and he was capable of some self-delusion, I think, too, because but here's the thing. He was in the biggest drug organization in the world, but he didn't deal with drugs. He was a security man. He was with the most violent crowd in the world, and he never hurt anybody. He was protecting people. And he was the right hand of the richest drug lords in the world, and he did not become a wealthy man. So he's very different from most of the people you might have an impression of in the drug business.
How did he get involved with the cartel? Who reached out to him?
Well, it was because he had connections from the military that the cartel bosses heard about him, and so they invited him down because they wanted protection from Pablo Escobar because he was killing and threatening their families. But he also had the friends in the British mercenary world who the drug cartel wanted to use as instruments of their own army to go after Pablo and kill him.
Well, I can't imagine that this is the way they usually recruit new members.
No. One of the people who was already working with the cartel was a friend of Jorge's as well, a colleague from the military who persuaded him to come down and take a...
Could he have said no?
He certainly toyed with saying no because he had never worked for a criminal organization. He was an engineer, a businessman. He was a completely honorable, honest man with no interest in doing that. But Pablo Escobar was so bad, such an enemy of the state as well as of the cartel, that it was perceived to be a patriotic duty to go out and try to get Pablo.
Well, was the Cali cartel all that admirable? Didn't they have a reputation for killing people, so-called discardables,
Absolutely.
The homeless, prostitutes, street children?
Not the Cali cartel so much. Those were the Medellin. They did do that. Now, at the same, these were not angels in the Cali cartel by any means, but they were much more conscious of their reputation.
Because Manuel Castells talks about that in his book, End of Millennium, and he says the Cali cartel...
They were bad people.
Were bad people, too.
Absolutely.
So, and what skills did Jorge have that particularly appealed to them?
Well, he was an engineer who specialized in surveillance and electronics. He also had, as I say, the access to British mercenaries.
And where is Cali in relation to Medellin?
Well, Medellin is in the northern part of Colombia, and Cali is in the south. And if you put Bogota in between and take them out to the east, you have a triangle.
And are they both easily accessible to the coca trade?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, Bogota is the big city. Medellin and Cali are about the same size, second and third largest cities in Colombia. They are big cities. They're a million people plus. So they have all the amenities, all you need, all the support, the banks, and enough people to be able to hide in plain sight.
My guest is William C. Remple, who has been an investigative reporter and editor mostly at the Los Angeles Times. He has won the Overseas Press Club Award, the Gerald Loeb Award, was a finalist for the Goldsmith Prize for Investigative Reporting, and he's written a book called At the Devil's Table, The Untold Story of the Insider Who Brought Down the Cali Cartel. The Pablo Escobar has been called the richest and most successful criminal in world history. What was didn't he have a decent relationship with the Cali cartel
yes.
at first?
Yes, they did. They were partners. The everyone in Colombia was in those days seemed like they were in drug trade, and they were there was plenty to go around, but there was a falling out in the late 80s. And there were differences of tactics between the two. The Cali cartel wanted to use their political influence to buy protection, essentially, and Pablo was in the business of forcing and intimidating and using terroristic tactics.
But didn't he also have political aspirations? He wanted to run for office, didn't he?
He did run for office. He was in the legislature as a backup assistant legislator. But yes, he was a man of ego, more than the Cali folks were more businessmen than politicians.
And they all worked with the revolutionary groups of Colombia, but as I understand, Escobar had almost fascistic leanings. He was an admirer of Hitler and Mussolini. It seems kind of weird for a drug dealer.
Yes. Yeah, well, he was not. Pablo was also not a fan of the FARC and the other. They fought each other. The insurgent groups would sometimes kidnap his people and hold them for ransom, and that was just that got his dander up, you might say. But he used it they hired right wing crowds and some of the right wing death squads or the insurgents were sicked on the insurgents originated and were funded by Pablo.
Well, you mentioned the Cali cartel used money to win influence, whereas Escobar used fear. But didn't they all have hitmen in their employ?
Yes, they certainly did. They had sicarios who were paid gunmen, assassins. The difference was that when Pablo killed people, he often did it in very broad public view and used it to intimidate. The Cali cartel also killed people, but they put the bodies in the Cauca River and they disappeared, so that there was no trace. And they certainly used it to intimidate, but in a selective way.
Wasn't Jorge being asked to be in effect a hitman, go after Pablo Escobar?
That's true. That would be in a more of a military sense, however, because what it was 12 British mercenaries, and they actually concocted a plan to attack the ranch where Pablo owned out in the jungle, and they were flying in with helicopters and big guns and 12 British mercenaries when they clipped a mountain and crashed and they had to abort the mission. But they were about 5 minutes away from attacking Pablo Escobar with a military force.
How did these cartels start? Did they develop independently
Yeah, it was they were local crime gangs that that got together, started off doing, you know, car theft and local kidnappings and for ransom, and then they branched out. And when cocaine became a big deal, they moved into that naturally. And frankly, if there'd have been something else come along besides drugs, they would have probably gone into that.
The leaders of the Cali cartel were the Rodriguez Orejuela brothers.
Orejuela, right.
And Gilberto got the nickname the chess player. Why that?
Because he was a very a smart fellow, a clever, and he would think things out and have tactics. He would think several moves ahead.
And you said that cocaine just came along, and but didn't that wind up just being their only business?
Yeah, well, it was a $7 billion a year business. I mean, they didn't need anything else.
Interestingly, all of the cartel members drove Mazdas. Why Mazdas?
Yeah, the Mazda was the fleet car of the Cali cartel. They, again, unlike Pablo Escobar, they were a low-profile group. They didn't want to draw attention. So to them, a Mazda was a perfectly good car that didn't draw attention, as they didn't go around with lots of jewelry and big guns. They were businessmen.
And did they have legitimate businesses to launder their money?
They did. They had a chain of drugstores, and I say, like Walmart, we're not talking here, or
CVS.
Rite Aid or whatever, yeah.
So that's what they did. They had these pharmacies.
And they also had lots of real estate. They turned the money around quickly into commercial real estate investments. You know, Pablo, on the other hand, would like to collect his cash and put it in a vault, and that was problematic because it piled up, and pretty soon the mice were eating it and the rot was rotting it, and Pablo lost a small fortune to just that sort of erosion.
Served him right. We talked about FARC. They also got involved in the drug trade, didn't they?
They have. It was less so in the days of when the Cali cartel ruled. They controlled it all. But the development of the FARC is really more recent than that.
So Jorge is enlisted to get Pablo Escobar. Wasn't that a rather long shot mission?
Well, The twelve British mercenaries made it real. Those fellows.
Where did these British missionaries come from? Had they been missionaries in Africa? Mercenaries.
Yeah.
Had they fought in other parts of the world?
Yes, they had fought in Rhodesia and South Africa, Angola, and various other places. They were some tough guys.
And what was their plan?
Their plan was to they came over to Colombia and trained, waiting for Pablo to go back to his ranch, and that ranch was the place where, you know, he had the hippopotamus and the giraffes and all his wildlife, but it was a huge place. And finally, there was Pablo, who owned one of the Medellin soccer teams, had a celebration to honor their big tournament victory. And so, knowing he was going to throw a party at the ranch, the mercenaries activated their plan and were flying from their training grounds down in the southern part of Colombia in two helicopters. That, like I say, one of them clipped a mountaintop as it was coming in for refuel, and one of them was killed, and they had to abort the mission. But they were literally 5 minutes flying time from Pablo at the time.
Well, after that mission failed, were the Godfathers angry with Jorge?
No, it was an unfortunate turn, but they thought they'd get another chance, and the mercenaries actually relocated to Panama, waiting for a chance to come back and do it again.
The same plot or a different plot?
Well, it turned out that plot would never apply, because by then the government came in and seized Pablo's ranch, and now the whole plan was out the window. But by this time, Jorge was unable to leave. I mean, he was still responsible, and so the new plans were being discussed. Then Pablo went to prison. Voluntarily, you might remember, because the government agreed to outlaw extradition to the state, so he felt safe now. He was going to go do a little time in prison. Well, at that point, the Cali cartel dispatched Jorge to round up some bombs and an airplane to go bomb the prison where Pablo was, which was a harebrained idea, but that's what they wanted to do.
William C. Rempel, his book, At the Devil's Table, The Untold Story of the Insider Who Brought Down the Cali Cartel, It is published by Random House. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with William C. Rempel, R-E-M-P-E-L, his book, At the Devil's Table, The Untold Story of the Insider Who Brought Down the Cali Cartel. It's published by Random House. So a new plan was devised, but Jorge was also put in charge of some other things, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He became a security guard, in charge of security guards, and ran the bodyguard corps for Miguel Rodriguez, the boss of the bosses. And he installed radio communication systems that were allowed the cartel to stay in touch with one another without having to have registered phones and registered radio systems. It was all very elaborate.
Well, he seems to be a rather moral guy, and yet he was helping criminals who were in the same business as the man he was trying to kill.
Yes, yes, and he made no. One of the worries he had all along was that he would be asked to engage in the drug traffic, which he opposed, or engage in something more sinister and serious, like killing or hurting someone, which he would not do. He felt what he told himself, even though he was working with these people, was that he was there to protect men, women, and children, and their lives of the Godfathers, but that we regarded as a harmless enterprise as opposed to facilitating drug trafficking and murder.
How close did he get to the bosses?
He was Miguel's right-hand man.
I mean, were they friends?
Well, he considered him a friend. He was a confidant of the boss. And
he witnessed murders, didn't he?
He did. He did. It's one of the most traumatic things that he was there for a mass murder, a four people strangled to death one by one, and at the time he wondered if it was such a shock. He wondered if he was going to be one of those killed as well, or worse asked. Well, not worse, but also he might be asked to assist. It was one of the moments when he was beside himself with fear.
Why did the bosses trust him?
Well, he was a very able and loyal protector, and that's what they saw. And he did his job. He did his job well. He was very much a MacGyver kind of character, who was able to. He could take, for instance, the motorcycle crews of the bodyguard teams. They wanted to have radios. Well, he figured out how to put radio switches on the handle so that they could talk hands-free. You know, this is back in the early 90s. So he devised things that made their jobs easier, and he was trustworthy. Yeah, he was taking care of their women and children, too.
It seems to me that since Escobar had such a high profile, it would have still have been in the best interest of the Cali cartel to have him alive, because then there'd be less pressure on them.
There was something to that. At the point after Pablo went to prison, there was some concern about him being in prison because they realized that Pablo was using prison as a place to run his drug business.
And being allowed to do that.
He was, absolutely. He not only was he allowed to do that, but he actually brought people into the prison to kill them. His enemies and his critics, and he his prison cell was a luxury spa with water beds and jacuzzis and televisions, and the prostitutes were smuggled in every day.
Can you talk about what happened at Los Cocos? Was that his way of getting revenge against their attempts to kill him?
It was a way. He was a particularly an arch enemy of Pacho Herrera, who was one of the four godfathers of the Cali cartel, and he had a personal vendetta against Pacho. And this was Pacho's friends and family who played soccer every Friday night or Thursday night at a field that Pacho built out in the middle of nowhere. This was one of those Field of Dreams kind of soccer fields. And Pablo found out about it and dispatched a team of about 20 gunmen who gathered slowly in a farm nearby. And then once they were ready, once the game was underway one night, these these 20 people came down in a truck dressed as cops, got out of the truck, and opened fire on the players on the field.
So it sounds like he was a lot more effective in his plans than Jorge and the Collies were in their plans.
He was very effective as a killer, yes.
Ken, you talk about Guillermo Palomari. Who was he?
Palomari was the accountant for the Cali cartel and introduced centralized record keeping, computerized record keeping, and massive use of computers for massive eavesdropping on telephone lines throughout Cali and Medellin.
And he wound up being the rival.
Well, he and Jorge had a rivalry in that Palomari was jealous of Jorge's access to the bosses and his closest. He was with them at all hours, and Palomari was an ambitious fellow who wanted to rise in the cartel. Jorge was not an ambitious guy who wanted out of the cartel, but he had the access.
You give me the sense that Jorge was almost a bit delusional about Colombia's capability for democracy. And that's one of the excuses he gives, anyway, for being willing to participate in this ridiculous scheme.
Well, back in 89-90, Colombian democracy was in a terrible state. It was a country owned by the drug lords. Their constitution was rewritten in 1992 by attorneys for the Cali cartel. The police were on the payroll of Cali. Something like 20% of them were. It wasn't just a few bad apples.
Sounds like the sort of thing the mafia had after World War II in Sicily.
Perhaps. I'm not familiar with just how bad that was, but it was thorough. It was Colombia was the original narco-democracy.
My guest is William C. Rempel. His book, At the Devil's Table, The Untold Story of the Insider Who Brought Down the Cali Cartel, published by Random House's WMYC, WMYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, Pablo Escobar was finally murdered in 1993, but not by the Cali.
No, he was killed by the police. They tracked him down and gunned him down on a rooftop all by himself in Medellin.
He had been released from prison.
Right. Well, he'd escaped from prison, technically, but it was he walked through an open field. They didn't have the fence around the whole prison.
How did Jorge feel about that?
Well, he thought this is my lucky day, in a way. I mean, he went after a couple days of celebration, where Cali, you know, horns honking and parades, Jorge went to the bosses and said, and offered his, tendered his resignation. He thought that his work was done and this was time to go. And Miguel said, no, you're too valuable to us, your family, and we need you.
Did their business immediately benefit from Escobar's death?
Well, it had already benefited. By the time Pablo was killed, his market share had dwindled to nothing.
But they must have been aware that at this point, the U.S. would shift its focus towards Cali because there was still a drug war going on.
Well, Jorge told them that would happen because the Cali cartel was pretty delusional itself. They thought, the leadership thought they owned the political arena. The police, and they had so riddled the police departments and even the elite anti-narcotics corps that they knew what was happening before anyone did. The United States, the DEA guys in Colombia called the Cali cartel the Cali KGB because they had such an incredibly effective intelligence network.
But Palomari was kind of nonchalant about information security. Bother Jorge?
It didn't. Well, Jorge pointed it out. He thought it was kind of crazy, but it wasn't his problem. It was the boss's problem. And they eventually had the rivalry was more about access. And Palomari would sometimes accuse Jorge of taking money, a petty cash and not reporting it, being typical bean counter kind of conduct that Jorge just was appalled.
So Jorge wanted to leave. They said he was too valuable. Did he continue to have a lot of work?
Oh, he was plenty to do. What had changed once Pablo was gone is that Jorge's job was to protect the Godfathers from arrest.
What about his wife? He had started working for the cartel not long after he got married. Was she happy about all of this?
She was supportive, however, and her line to him was, "Don't tell me what you're doing. I just don't want to know."
One of the big problems in American mobs has been infighting. Different people involved in power struggles. Was that also the case with Kali?
Not really. Certainly not until the arrests started happening toward the end. There were four godfathers who were all very powerful, and the lesser, the lieutenants who were scattered about in the Northern Valley and such, were everyone was content with the operation. They dominated the world market. They had 80% of the world market in cocaine.
And they also had the support of the police, the military in the area, the government.
And that was a
problem. Because they bought officials?
Absolutely. And that was credited to the Rodriguez Orwella brothers. Their political connections were enormously effective in helping make the cartel work and profit.
They had a friend in Colonel Velasquez. Going back to the Los Cocos killings, they could not have – Escobar's people could not have done that without the cooperation of some local people. Did they ever catch the farmer who had aided his men?
Well, there was a farmer who allowed his who rented his farm out to this group of killers, who claimed he didn't know what they were doing. But he immediately went into hiding and was hiding for 2 or 3 years because he knew he was in serious trouble with the cartel. And yes, he was finally found by the cartel, not by police.
When did Jorge stop believing that the Cali cartel was different from Escobar on a moral level?
Well, I think he always felt like they were different, but it required some hair splitting and parsing here that you and I might not recognize from our distance. But where he was in the midst of it, he was able to make that distinction.
Who was really going after the Calis? Was it the Colombian government or the U.S. government? At this point, we're talking about H.W. Bush being the president, first President Bush. And he made the Cali cartel a prime target of the DEA, which spent over 91,000 case hours tracking the cartel godfathers. And then President Clinton came into office. Did he continue that approach?
Oh, yeah. And the Clinton administration actually beefed up the diplomatic pressure enormously to the point that, the Cali cartel in 1994 put $6 million into the presidential campaign of Ernesto Samper, who was not supposed to win. He was a real underdog. And he managed to eke out a 20,000-vote victory. And that $6 million that was secretly donated by the Cali cartel was the difference.
So they had a friend.
They had a president. Yeah. That was Miguel's comment. We own the president.
So when the United States tried to secure extradition for the two of the top godfathers, was Samper's government cooperative?
Well, Samper's government was in a pickle. They really needed the money from the foreign aid, the money that was being threatened. So there was considerable cooperation on the surface. And one of the Jorge remembers having an emissary from President Samper come to town. He came to Cali to apologize to the Cali Godfathers because the president couldn't help them. His advice was don't get caught.
The CIA got involved.
Well, the CIA was always on the always around. Jorge actually, one of his proud moments was that he was able to wiretap he put a wiretap on the Cali on the CIA living quarters in Cali. Just a little humor between spies.
Was the cartel aware of the fact at some point that Jorge was no longer its friend?
Well, what happened is Jorge was told to assist in the execution of Palomari, the accountant. The Godfathers realized that the information he had and the records he had that were being seized by the government were roadmaps to their wealth and to their security, and that they felt he knew too much and had to be killed. He couldn't be trusted to keep the secrets. So Jorge was told, you help the assassin, whose name was Cesar Yuste. That was when George drew the line. Jorge felt like he had this is when he had to get out. He couldn't go further. He wasn't going to help kill somebody. And that's when he had to make his break. And only way he could see to get out was to bring down the cartel on top of him as he went.
And since he knew everything that was going on, he was the perfect informant.
He was. But when he tried to reach out to the United States government, his first attempt was essentially to call 1-800-CIA, and they didn't know. They thought he was a nut.
But he was a nut who was putting himself into incredible danger.
Absolutely. And most of the phones in Colombia, in Cali area, were being monitored by various cartel members.
So how did he get away with it?
Well, he went to a payphone and made the call to the CIA, and they again, the switchboard operator didn't know what to do with him, and so shined him on.
So they captured the U.S. government captured Miguel.
Well, not at first. They tried. Jorge was introduced to two DEA agents. Now they weren't. It wasn't love at first sight here because he was afraid to even talk to anybody that he didn't know. And he also had some suspicions that the DEA in Colombia was not trustworthy because Miguel had always told him, yeah, we have people in the DEA. And Jorge was tended to believe that. He was certainly, his life was at stake here. Making this move was not some tactical thing. This was life and death. So when he talked to the government, U.S. officials, one fellow in Miami, Eddie Kazarowski from the Customs Service, was trying to orchestrate all this. Jorge insisted, "I don't want to see anyone that even looks Colombian. When I meet your people and they're going to meet him in a cane field, I want to see people that look American."
So now he has to live in the United States. He's had to leave his home country.
Yes.
And he is that okay with him, living in the Witness Protection Program?
He's very grateful to the Witness Protection Program for protecting his family and himself. But for a foreigner, the Witness Protection Program has serious limits. He also feels like a prisoner.
Now, the cartels have been destroyed, both the Medellin and Cali, but cocaine continues to be produced and exported into this country. Who's doing it now?
Well, that's the irony. The bringing down the Cali cartel really is, to this day, the biggest, most successful operation carried out in the war on drugs in 40 years. But what it accomplished was essentially to move the violence problem to another part of the world, and it's gone to Mexico and Central America.
So the Mexicans and the Central Americans go down into Colombia and the region in general, because some of the coca comes from other countries.
Oh, it still comes from Colombia. The Colombian cartels are smashed up into a lot of smaller operators, and what they do, they become wholesalers to the Mexican gangs, and so Colombia is still a player in the cocaine market. No mistake about that. But they're no longer like the Cali cartel. It was one of these vertically integrated corporation styles where they controlled everything from the coca leaf to the street sale. So every part of the economic chain was controlled by employees and operatives of the cartel.
So it must have cut down on the acquisition of foreign currency in Colombia.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, foreign currency came into Colombia by the ton, not by the dollar. And it was carried in on disposable jetliners that landed. Then they walk away from the jetliner, but they could carry tons of currency.
And now the mice in Medellin don't have anything to eat.
That's right.
William C. Rempel's book is At the Devil's Table, The Untold Story of the Insider Who Brought Down the Cali Cartel. It's published by Random House. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.